was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have fought a duel with deadly weapons within this state or out of it. So forget about that loophole, Jason. Today's title is You Just Got Burned by Abe Lincoln. I'm your host, Brent Taylor, assistant professor of history at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who has only spent four nights at Freddy's. He is an associate professor of communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
What are you talking about? What's Freddy's?
Oh, you'll find out as the little one gets older. Okay. Don't worry about that one. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will look at a 1909 eclipse, not directly, of course, in yesterday's news. And for our main event, we will put on our asbestos gear so that we don't get burned by some of Abe Lincoln's best one-liners. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. Yesterday's news. Of course, the big news lately was the eclipse. 10,000 people showed up in Paducah just to see it.
Now, did you see it? Did you go out? You went out and saw
it. I went out and saw the whole thing. What about you?
I did. I thought it was not what I thought it was going to be. It was really neat because it got not totally dark. It just had that kind of cool...
Dusk-like.
Dusk, yeah. It was like dusk, but then it was so neat to look at.
Yeah. I didn't think I would like it as much as I did, but it was really neat. So I guess I saw what all the fuss was about.
Yeah, I agree. I understand why people chase these things around.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to do that.
No.
But if it's going to fly right over my head, I'll look at it.
Let's do it again in 7 years.
We'll make it a date. So back in 1909, we had one. And the paper said this, today the people of Western Hemisphere will have the opportunity to observe a central eclipse of the sun. This eclipse is one of a peculiar type of solar eclipse. And just for a short time, it says, at the beginning and end and totality during the remainder of its course. It is known as a central eclipse and occurs only once in many centuries. So we were right on the path of it, this thing says. It was kind of moving like it did across the country. The thing I thought was really neat about it was it says that the eclipse is 6:45 o'clock this evening, and then the sun set at 7:30.
Yeah, it said that it set as an eclipse, or as it set, it was in the eclipse stage.
Yeah, so really it would be more like on the horizon when you saw it rather than directly above us like it was in this past one.
Right, that would be really neat. Was it Hopkinsville too? Then?
Yeah, right around Hopkinsville, just like this one. Apparently Hopkinsville gets these things regularly, geologically
every
speaking.
Every 100 years.
On the dot, each and every time.
Yeah.
But eclipses come and go, I suppose. And we are already at that time for a word from our sponsors.
Hey, yeah, come on down to the Trent Citywide Appliance Center. This week we've got a deal on portable 10-inch color TVs, luggage-type strap, two antennas for VHF and UHF reception, only $194, only at the Trend.
So I see that you're giggling over there. What part of this like has got you tickled?
That was done in a nightclub. Whoever did that was like dancing, I guess, at the time.
Well, it's the Trend. I mean, that totally rocks,
that's
right?
That's a great idea for a store. Just name it the Trend. Then people will think that it's, you know, the thing to do.
I think so. The thing that caught my eye about this was the luggage strap that you're going to put on this TV. And you're going to be walking down the street with this thing. Listening to the Bee Gees.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It had that. I'm sure it's that the kind of leather, you know, with the metal on the end, very comfortable. It was heavy. You had to carry around a TV. And I guess wherever they took it, probably took it camping or whatever.
I don't know where you take a portable TV in the 70s. I mean, I just saw it up against the wall, taking up half the room. So I don't know about this one. But we are ready for the main event.
Oh, the main event.
Yes, the main event. And that is Abe Lincoln's best one-liners. He is known for his wit throughout history. Probably the thing that we know the most is his most famous line is you can fool some of the people some of the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
Right.
Kind of a deep thought right there.
Yeah.
Looks like public opinion polls, though. I mean, no matter how great something is, there's always 15 or 20% of people who just, oh, no, I don't like that.
Yeah, but what do you think that developed from, his ability to kind of spin a phrase like that?
I suppose it's being out in the backwoods.
Uh-huh.
Remember, he's kind of in the West. They call Kentucky, Illinois, all that's the West back then. And storytelling is part of the culture and everything.
Right. It's just like how he grew up or had to interact with people in a folksy kind of way.
Yeah, very folksy. That is true. It didn't always play well in Washington, D.C.
Right.
But it worked for him most of the time.
Especially from this giant man that really just stood out everywhere.
Yeah. You might not expect him to sit you down and tell you a story, but that might be what happens. So we've got several of the different things that he said here. Here's another one. I've endured a great deal of ridicule without much malice and have received a great deal of kindness, not free from ridicule.
It's just that kind of phrasing, too, when you take two ideas like the other one, you kind of switch it.
Maybe that's what seems so clever.
That's exactly what makes it sound clever. It might be completely true and accurate, but it's just a good way to put a phrase.
Yeah, it's just kind of catchier that way. So have you ever had that happen to you? You get one of those backhanded compliments?
Oh, yeah.
That's what he's talking about here.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, and you walk away feeling pretty good for about 4 seconds.
Then it sinks in and you're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
What happened there? Yeah. Oh, here's another one. This is parenting tips from Abe Lincoln. So he's watching his sons, Willie and Tad. They were doing what brothers do, and that's they annoy each other. They start bickering. What's wrong? Lincoln's neighbor asked him that. What's wrong? Just what's the matter with the whole world? I've got 3 walnuts and each wants 2.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's so childlike, too. That is just like a kid. Well, he got the second one. Why can't I get the second
right.
one?
Yeah. Well, but it's trying to make the point, too, that I don't know, it's just human nature to never be satisfied, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and be jealous. Who's getting extra? I didn't get extra. Yeah, it really succinctly rolls all that up into one little line. That's what's so clever about these things.
Yeah, people can understand kind of the idea that he's getting at as a metaphor or whatever in this kind of illustration.
Right. Now, where you don't want to be is on the receiving end of one of these little sideshow comments in the middle of an election campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened with Stephen Douglas. Of course, he ran against him 2 different times. Once for Senate, once for president. So he's out there on the stump against Stephen Douglas. And Douglas thought he had him.
Right.
He told the audience there, Mr. Lincoln was a very good bartender.
Yeah.
So we're taking the little dig at him there.
About the,
you know, like his
ran
past
the stores.
And, you know, he didn't come from the blue blood
right.
kind of stuff.
Just
and,
a common person.
Yeah, just, you know, one of those unwashed masses types, right? So thought he had him. Then Lincoln comes back and says, what Mr. Douglas has said is true enough. I did keep a grocery. I did sell cotton, candles, cigars, and sometimes whiskey. I remember in those days that Mr. Douglas was one of my best customers. Many a time have I stood on one side of the counter and sold whiskey to Mr. Douglas on the other side. But the difference between us now is this. I have left my side of the counter, but Mr. Douglas still sticks to his as tenaciously as ever.
Right.
So we're implying they're always drunk and always hitting the bottle.
Right. But again, he doesn't say that.
No.
He just creates kind of a picture in your mind.
He lets you fill in the blanks. And maybe that's the brilliance of it. We're trying to get to the brilliance of it. Maybe that's it.
Well, we'll try to get to the brilliance of Abraham Lincoln.
Probably.
I think we can achieve it. We'll try.
Okay, why not? That's the new mission. So there's another instance where this one's kind of a sweet one. So that one was kind of a mean, had a rough edge to it. This one's kind of sweet. With the Civil War, there were all kinds of people who wanted forgiveness after it was over with. And the president has pardoning power. So they're constantly coming to him. And there's all these letters and people are saying, you know, I really need a pardon. And these people can say that, you know, I'm really good. I deserve it and everything. So he gets this one, And it's supposed to have like all these letters of recommendation and everything, and it doesn't have any of that. It's just all by itself. And so the president turns to one of the advisors there and says, has this man no friends? And they said that he didn't have any friends. And Lincoln said, then I'll be his friend.
Right.
Signed the pardon.
Yeah. So unlike all the rest of them, it had these accompanying letters.
Yeah, and all the pretentious stuff about it. And they probably knew people and had connections because the officers of the rebellion were all from the upper classes.
Yeah.
Apparently this guy wasn't that case.
Would have stood out to him as a more, maybe a more sincere moment.
And maybe more deserving even.
Right.
In some way. Yeah, kind of like an equalizer sort of thing.
But it was like that, right? I mean, he went to war, he wanted to save the Union, but it wasn't his goal to knock people down.
No, as a matter of fact, you're dead on about that. At the end of the war, his whole theme is forgiveness.
Right.
That we need to move past this. We need to get the country reunited again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really one of the tragedies of his death, was that when he was gone, we lost that regulator.
Yeah, what would that have been like, right, if Lincoln had been there to lead after the war for Reconstruction?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been perfect, but it surely would have been better than what happened with the Johnson years and the Grant years and all the stuff that took place afterwards. Here's a funny one. So we've all had this experience. You're at the restaurant and something's just not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wit came out again. So he's at this hotel and he tells the guy, if this is coffee, please bring me some tea. But if this is tea, please bring me some coffee.
He couldn't identify it either way.
No, it's some kind of drink, but whatever it is, I need something else.
Yeah. Sometimes when you zing somebody like that, though, or even complain in a clever way, it makes a big difference.
I bet even the guy thought it was funny.
Sure. That's what I mean. Yeah. He's just, well, it was Lincoln anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there are times where we really mean to get the dig in. And that's the following example. There's George McClellan. And he was the commander early on during the war for the Union.
Okay.
All right. So he's a general. But he and Lincoln never got along. McClellan thought that he knew everything, that Lincoln didn't know anything. He really resented that the commander-in-chief was in charge. So they went back and forth. Matter of fact, McClellan ran against him for president in 1864.
Oh, okay.
That's how much more he thought he knew than Abe Lincoln.
Right.
So these two were not getting along. And one of the things McClellan really resented was that Lincoln was always riding him for information. You know, you've got to send me the information about what's going on back here at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And he spent time in the telegraph office
instead
of the White House.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he's in there all the time. He wants to know. He's trying to do the best job he can. McClellan hated that, though. He was of the opinion that just get out of the way. Let me do the job. I'll do the fighting. You do the talking.
Right. You're an elected politician.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm so the general.
Right. Let the experts handle this, Mr. Lincoln. So one day he had enough, and he sent a telegram to Lincoln, and it said, "We have just captured 6 cows. What shall we do with them?" That's the whole message. You know, you want to be hands-on, I'm going to let you be hands-on, buddy.
It's a dig. It's kind of a sarcastic response.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Tell me what to do with these cows.
This is great. Brevity is the soul of wit. 2-word response from Lincoln. Milk them. A. Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah, he liked to. He signed things as A. Lincoln a lot. What was that? So I guess it was just his personal habit.
Probably save time. If you sign as many things as he signed, I bet you'd sign J. Donner.
Right.
Yeah. So there's another time he goes to the doctor's office. And the guy tells him that he's got this, it's like a mild form of smallpox. And, of course, the first thing you want to know is that contagious? The doctor says that it was very contagious. And then that wit came along, and he said, now I have something I can give everybody.
Did he have smallpox?
Well, this version of it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sure enough. I mean, remember, no inoculations back then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody gets everything.
That's news to me. Oh, and in 1863, too.
Yeah, 1863. But that's, again, the human nature of what the electorate wants.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot make them happy.
Right. That's what I was getting at.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You just cannot make them happy, no matter what you do. Half the people are love it and half the people hate it.
Right.
Yeah.
As you said in that first quote.
Yeah. Yeah, it came. It must be on his mind a lot because it keeps sort of resurfacing
right.
some of these things. This is another neat one. Everybody's dealt with these people. They just, they want something and they don't want to give anything in return, really. And it's, they ask for like these big favors for just because
I mean,
they're
asking
it.
The president. They're like coming into the White House asking for things.
Yeah. Well, this woman mailed him a letter. And what it was really about was it was an autograph request. So would you just please sign this? I want your autograph.
Right.
So he's in the middle of the war.
Yeah.
And there's autograph seekers.
Yeah.
I'm sure that just hit him wrong that particular moment. And he wrote back, "Dear madam, when you ask from a stranger that which is of interest only to yourself, always enclose a stamp. There's your sentiment, and here's my autograph."
That's great. Yeah.
You know, so instead of best wishes, it's don't forget the stamp next
time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let me alone. Let me do this war.
Right, yeah. He wanted a self-addressed stamped envelope, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was about. So here's another good one. You've got to be so delicate with different people in different situations, and you're in politics. You have to be political. So he's supposed to be looking at this artwork, and the artwork's horrible. So it's like he's painted people, and it just doesn't look right. And so, of course, they say, "Hey, what do you think?" And he doesn't want to come out and say, "Man, this is just really god-awful artwork." So he says, "He observes the Lord's commandments. It seems to me that he hath not made to himself a likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or in the earth beneath, or is in the waters under the earth."
So it doesn't look like anything that we would recognize.
No. And that comes out of the Ten Commandments. So I'm sure it was right there on the tip of his tongue,
yeah.
You know.
I think maybe Lincoln planned these things. I think he was
ready. Oh, you
think ready.
He sat up at night and he said, okay, the next time something happens, I don't want to be caught flat-footed. I want to have one of these zingers
sure.
ready.
Oh, sure. He had to have some ready. He had to have some ready.
Okay, I guess that could be the case there. this is so great. We talk about the swamp, right? Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Drain the swamp. Both sides have said that in the last 10 years, by the way. Drain the swamp. So he's got this senator there. He's talking to him. The senator, kind of a humorless guy, Benjamin Wade. And so he came in. He's complaining about something. And Lincoln tries telling one of the stories. So he's going to the story well. And this guy didn't really want to listen to that.
Yeah.
So he said, "Mr. President, it is nothing but anecdotes. I have heard enough of them. You were letting the country go to hell on anecdotes. We are not more than a mile from there now." So Lincoln turned around and said, "Mr. Wade, that is just about the distance to the Capitol, isn't it?"
Yeah, he's just ready, though. He was just ready.
He thought of that one, Wade. He thought, okay, Senator Wade's coming. What can I say to this guy when he starts in?
But you still see that, too. You'll see them, especially senators, who, you know, there's only 100 of them, very powerful people in the country. So they and the president back and forth kind of snipping.
Oh, yeah. We saw that with Mitch McConnell,
right? You still see it, right.
That the president has excessive expectations.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you can be a little bit more biting when you're not, of course, direct. You kind of undersay it or let the people figure out what you meant.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's the secret. We're still trying to find that secret, aren't we? Yeah. So another problem that he had was as president, everybody wants an appointment, a political appointment. And, you know, we underrate this. We don't think about it that often.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw it with this latest administration. They spent months and months and months just trying to get people into all the jobs.
Right.
And meanwhile, the country's trying to run along, and that means all we're doing is trying to get people jobs. Well, it was even worse back then. This is before they had written some of the laws about civil service and things like that.
Yeah.
And
people would reward their friends when they became elected.
Of course. The spoil system. That was an Andrew Jackson thing. People were complaining about it since the 1830s.
Right.
And it had only gotten worse since then. And so
Could people walk into the White House in those days? I know earlier on they did.
I'm not sure about
not
that particular
during the war.
That particular security situation. At this time, though, there had only been one political assassination attempt against a president.
Mm-hmm.
So the security was a lot more lax.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe I don't know what exactly it would be like, but for sure you had more opportunities to see it and visit it as kind of like the people's house and everything.
Right. Or come in and just ask to speak to the president.
Maybe. I'm not sure if it worked that way back then or not. I had never – but this is almost like that. It's almost to that level.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy comes in. He wants a job. He said that he was asking for an appointment as a minister abroad. Finding he could not get that, he came down to some more modest position. Finally, he asked to be made a Thai waiter. So that's just like a waiter at a restaurant. When he saw he could not get that, he asked me for an old pair of trousers. It is sometimes well to be humble. It's like, you know, will you give me this job? No. Will you give me that job? No. What about this job? No. Can I have your pants?
Just give me some pants.
Yeah, I'll be
so
happy. I'll turn around.
I'll get a job somewhere.
With my new pants. That's right. There was another situation like that. It says here, the chief of customs has just died. That's what the guy told him. May I take his place? He said, it's fine with me if the undertaker doesn't mind. So another one of those little things.
Yeah, it's a little quip.
Yeah, and he's always got them ready. And we are ready to pay some bills around here.
Oh, yeah. Another fake history sponsor.
Yeah, of course. You can't have a real history sponsor. Only the fake ones will do. The best spring remedy for the children, Payne Celery Compound.
What do you do with the celery?
Are you eating it? Yeah,
it's a compound?
Yeah, it's like
ingest it?
Yeah, it's like a pill or something, and you take it, and it claims that it gets rid of the run-down feeling that you feel in the spring.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The whole family's run down, I think it said.
It did say that, and it fixes things like thinness, nervousness,
right,
headaches, pale faces, poor appetites. It can do it for the children. It can do it for the older people in the family. This is kind of like a real cure-all. Doesn't it have to taste nasty, though?
Yeah.
A celery compound?
This person had a lot of extra celery sitting around. People weren't just buying it. Let's make a medicine out of it. But that's what they did back then. They'd make any claim they want, too.
Oh, they made tons of health claims.
Right.
Coca-Cola used to have health claims. That it was a medicinal drink. And so we get the same kind of thing here. This appears to be maybe some kind of vitamin. But the problem is, in this era, this is turn of the century, you just don't know for sure. And you just never can tell. But what is your biggest takeaway for today?
All right, let me think about this. So you sprung it on me.
I know, I set a trap.
I was still thinking about that celery.
Is that your biggest takeaway, that they had the celery compound?
No, I think it's about Lincoln. We talked about this before. Of course, it's easy to just love Lincoln. I've always just liked Lincoln. And part of that is, he was just such a different president, perfect for those times, and just kind of a normal person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, even Jefferson Davis agreed with that.
Yeah.
And that's amazing
mm-hmm.
to think that that could be the case. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear. You're not afraid, are you, Jason?
I don't know. What are you going to say next?
Well, all I'm going to say is...
I thought we were done.
No, we're not done, because more quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to our sound engineer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.